Hi, I'm Rochelle Jackson. Welcome to the Crime Couch. I'm an investigative journalist and true crime author, and I know who's who in the zoo, the crims, the cops, and the interesting individuals in between. So get comfy and join me each week on the Crime Couch for a rollicking, intriguing tale. It'll be one heck of a journey. Former Detective Senior Sergeant Wayne Wally Laver is the third longest serving police officer with 55 years under his belt. What Wally doesn't know about being a detective isn't worth knowing. He did many years in the Homicide Squad and more than 20 years in DTS, or Detective Training School, as an instructor. I'm sitting with Wally on the Crime Couch in one of Melbourne's Bayside suburbs. Hi, Wally. Thanks very much for sitting with me on the Crime Couch today. Tell me, why did you become a cop?
Well, hi, Rochelle. Yeah, look, it's a pleasure to be here talking with you today. Why I became a cop was my father that probably influenced me initially to join. I was still at school as a 16-year-old and thinking about joining the bank, and he said he looked at about joining the police force via the police cadets, and he just we had a lot of discussion about it, and then lo and behold, I went and applied, got in, and of course he obviously influenced me to make the right decision, because 55 years later I was as what I spent in the job, so, and loved every minute of it.
You moved through uniform into the crime department and then the Bureau of Criminal Intelligence. How did policing differ in the Bureau from, say, being in uniform?
Well, just being in uniform, you're just doing the basics of working the van and so forth. Yeah, you get to get your crooks, as in you might attend burglaries, thefts, shop stealing, all those sorts of things. A lot of traffic offences, obviously dealing a lot with drink driving, etc. But as a detective, it is a lot different from the point of view that you continue with the initial investigation the uniform might do, and then you get the jobs to do. If it's working at a squad, obviously, depending on what the job is, the uniform will go, and then local detectives will go, and then if need be, they call in the squad, such as the homicide, if it's a death that you're looking at.
Was it a natural fit for you to go into detective and also to be in the Bureau of Criminal Intelligence?
Yeah, look, it was what influenced me actually to really want to get in to become a detective. I had probably, as a young uniform member, I mucked up a job, and at a station I hadn't been in the job long or on the street long, and when it came out that I had mucked the job up, I had two of the old members of the station dragged me into a room, and they really got up my nose about it, and rightly so. But they got up my nose about what I did, but then never told me what I should have done. A particular detective sergeant was walking past, heard all of this, waited till they'd finished, called me around to his office, and then sat with me and said, look, I heard all of that. Yeah, you mucked up. Yeah, you did the wrong thing. But this is what you should have done. And then he went through it all step by step by step. And then when I finished with him, I thought, that's what I want to do. And that's what influenced me then to become a detective. And then, of course, going through the ranks working at a division. And then I got asked to go into the Crime Intelligence Unit, or as it was then, the Bureau of Criminal Intelligence. It had just formed. And I was lucky with the person I was working with. We were actually going around chasing some of Australia's most wanted, so it was good experience.
You spent more than two decades training detectives at DTS. Why did you become an instructor?
Well, I got asked to go in there, and then and I thought I just wanted to impart my knowledge onto new detectives coming through, and I'm a massive believer in telling people to learn their trade, And I thought, well, if I can teach people to learn their trade and to do the job properly, it's worthwhile doing that. And then I stuck with it. And then, of course, stayed there for quite a number of years and enjoyed doing that part of policing, and but just teaching detectives about being detectives and about never stop learning their trade. I used to get sick of me saying that, but I think it's important, because I always have the philosophy that a lot of coppers get hung up on wanting to learn the tricks of their trade. They never learn their trade, and that's what's important. Learn your trade first, and then any shortcuts you may want to take, provided it's not going to affect your investigation, you know when to do that at the appropriate time. But certainly learn your trade first, because that's what's important.
Wally, what are the basics of investigation in a case?
Well, the basics, of course, searching for whatever evidence you've got. And of course, when we say in the interest of justice, and that's because you've got victims that you've of the crimes that you're investigating, and you want to do the best job you can for your victims, because often we tend to forget our victims once you get involved in an investigation. But looking after your victims is most important. Of course, it's got to be in accordance with the law. So that's why I talk about knowing your trade, know the law, so that you can do your investigation. You know who you're doing it for, apart from wanting to get the job done yourself, but you've got victims that you've got to consider and look after, and they want closure, and then, of course, do it in accordance with the law.
What determines if a crime is to be investigated by a detective, Wally?
Well, it depends on, I guess, the nature of the crime that's been investigated. Often, I, as a detective, had gone to crime scenes as a divisional detective. Had gone to crime scenes, and the young uniformed people that were there were keen, and they've asked, provided it's not too serious or too hard for them to be able to do the job, because as working the van, they've still got other work they've got to do. But provided if they were keen enough and wanted to do it, I would just oversee what they were doing and then let them have a run at it. I'd always go and see their sergeant and say, this is what they want to do. Do you have any objection to them doing that? And at different times, I've actually had them assigned to us to keep them on the investigation so they can actually do the investigation, do the brief as the informant, and I would oversee it and give them all the assistance they need. And but if it's a fairly serious crime, no, it's got to go to the relevant squad, especially like as in the homicide, or if it when we used to have the armed robbery squad and so forth. But most uniformed people, they would do the initial crime, they go to all the initial crimes and then they hand it over. But provided, depending on the circumstances, if it's a house burglary and they've got to perhaps know who the offender is, they can then go with it. But just your basic thefts and so forth, yeah, they can do all of that. And the divisional detective is aware of it, but may assist and oversee, but let them do it. But if it's serious, you've got to do it.
So is there a certain cut-off point, though, in a crime, a serious crime, where it does become sort of part and parcel to hand that over to a squad?
Yeah, look, I think if it's, especially if there's, initially if there's no known crook, the squad can work on it, the squad will get assigned to it, and they can work full-time on that particular job. Yeah, they've got other jobs in tow as well, of course, but they can do that initial investigation. And I used to always make a habit of the especially the young uniformed people that you can see are keen and they're doing your crime scenes. I used to like to keep them updated with where we're at with it, so that because they are that initial part of it, and you may need them to go to court for you, so keep them updated. Don't just, you know, once you take over, push them aside. Let them know what's going on and keep them interested, especially if they may think, well, I want to be a detective down the track. So that's what you do.
So you're virtually then, I suppose, being a good advertisement for being a detective, because you're keeping them informed and you're keeping them in the loop. Is that important?
Oh, look, most important, especially at a major crime scene. I know at homicide scenes where you've got the crime scene guard, who's a uniformed guy that is there all night. And I would often make sure that they've got coffee, something to eat. I would go and talk to them about the great job they're doing, update them with what you know, what you need to tell them without going right through the whole job, obviously, but certainly update them so that they feel that, well, I'm a part of this investigation, because that crime scene guard is so important. Mm. And that if you just don't look after them, they will think, oh, what's the point, you know, and they'll slacken off with the job they're doing. And as I say, some of them, they're there all night.
Mm. And I know, as a journalist and who's also been on too many crime scenes, that's the first person you target. That's the first person you speak to as a journalist, because you try and get as much information from that person as you possibly can.
Yeah, well, because they're always, no matter what the job is, it's the homicide squad never go to a murder first up. Mm. The local detectives wouldn't be there first up. It's always the van to initially go to the job, see what the job is, and then decide, yes, we have a suspicious death, I've got to call the detectives. The detectives will look at it and say, well, yes, it is. It's a job that I need to call the homicide squad in, then the homicide squad in and take over the job, but you still keep people in the loop, which I think is most important.
A crime squad detective once told me, every contact leaves a trace. Now, what does that mean?
Well, it just means that every contact, every person has a contact with an item. So, like, for argument's sake, this table here in front of us, if I just brush on that, or if I walk past it and clothing I've got might brush on there, depending on the surface, but that's just where that a contact with something will leave a trace. And hopefully from that contact, you might get a DNA, you might get fingerprints and so forth, depending on the surface and what the contact has been. But every contact does leave a trace of some kind, and that's what you look for, and hopefully you get a break with that.
What does a detective first do, Wally, when they arrive at a crime scene? What do they do?
Well, when you first get there, you speak to the uniformed people that were first on the scene to find out exactly what's going on. So you then look at where is your crime scene, make sure that if the witnesses or people that at the scene aren't out of the scene, because you don't want people contaminating, so you get them out of the scene, get them all separated, because you don't want them talking, you don't want what they're going to say contaminated. And you've got to task people to do that, because you can't do everything. Mm. So you task people to perhaps look after certain witnesses. You've got your crime scene guard looking after your scene. You've got to make sure that everyone that was in the scene is out. Who are they? Where are they? What do we now need to do? And you just take it step by step. Never rush it. Just go step by step. But initially, though, when you first get there, always you speak to who was the first member on the scene, what they saw, what they've been told, what they've actually done. And then you then decide, well, when we then just expand on whatever's been done to date.
How crucial, Wally, are the first 24 hours in any investigation?
Yeah, look, it is pretty crucial, because you know, you're trying to, whilst everything is there, everything's fresh, you're hoping to find something that's going to lead you to a crook, if the crook's not in tow already. But that first 24 hours, you just keep working. I know when I was in the homicide squad, we would, that initial 24, 48 hours, we would work flat stick until we got, till we couldn't take it any further. If that was 18, 20 hours, well, so be it. Probably nowadays you can't quite do that, they'll stop you. But certainly back when I was there, we used to, you'd get the job and you would just keep working. So that initial action that you take, that initial work that you do, can make a difference with how your investigation's going to run. You just keep working until you can't take it any further. But that initial start, that initial few hours, is so important.
Why is it so important? Is it because the leads are hot, and then also, I suppose, your initial eyewitnesses can sort of lose sort of their, you know, recollections? Why is those first few hours so crucial?
Well, looking for evidence at the scene so that it's not going to be contaminated, trying to connect then an offender with the offence that's occurred. You've got witnesses to deal with, and yes, you've got to keep them separated. You've got to start and think about getting statements off them. You need to find out exactly what everyone has seen, what they've witnessed, what they're prepared to tell you. Some witnesses won't talk about it at all, depending on the circumstances. But it is most important that you get in there initially and get as much evidence as you can before that goes stale or before it gets contaminated. Sometimes just through, it might be that it's an outside crime scene and you've got inclement weather starting to come and you've got to get in there and process that scene before it gets the evidence gets lost through rain, through someone just coming into that scene that shouldn't be there. And you've got, that's why you have your crime scene guards to prevent any of that happening.
We've come so far, haven't we, with technology now. We've got DNA testing, forensics, CCTV, credit card, road records, mobile phone records. How has technology changed the way that crime is investigated, Wally?
Look, it's changed tremendously, as we all know. And I can remember when I first became a detective with what was available to us, you'd go in and you'd do your fingerprinting. But there wasn't a great deal else you could do. There was no DNA testing back then. But now, with your DNA, with the technology that's available to you, it's just changed so much. Changed for the better, obviously. But with all the checks that you can make with mobile phones and, you say, with credit cards, with there's so much available to you now that certainly wasn't available back in the 70s and even into the 80s. But once we got the DNA testing and once the technology changed and the technology was updated and improved so much, it just made our job a lot better. Not always solving the crime, but certainly went a great deal of assistance to be able to solve that crime.
Well, even confessions and statements, I mean, they used to be typed or written and signed. So how has that changed? I mean, I look now at how people are solving crimes and members are solving crimes, and I find it hard to believe that they actually were not capable, but the technology now is such an assistance, like DNA. How on earth were major crimes solved without DNA, Wally?
Well, that was just what we had at the time, and that's what we went with, and that's why, especially in the early stages, you'd be looking for prints to try and get something to connect the offender with the offence, be it prints, be it witnesses, be it any footage, CCTV footage that might have been around at the time, although back then not a lot of it was. But you'd rely a lot on witnesses, rely a lot on prints, and but it's changed so much now. Even with the interviewing of the offenders back then, the old type records of interview that was done, which would take a long time, now everything is recorded, and then you can sit down, similar to what we're doing now, when you've got an offender on one side of the table, you're on the other, and then you've got a process that you go through in relation to your interviewing, but everything's recorded, and it's a lot quicker than what it used to be. And and of course, if you weren't a touch typist, it would just be the old two fingers, and it would just drag on and on and on. And of course, sometimes you'd be halfway through the interview and look at, and you realise, because it was all carbon paper, and you realise you've got the carbon in backwards, and it was horrendous. But you got made sure everything was ready to go before you started. But now, with what's available and the technology that's available, so much better, so much better.
I always remember seeing my father, after he retired, doing the two-finger touch typing on the computer at home. And I always knew that whenever he would have been investigating and doing a record of interview with a crook, that he would have been having to have someone else give him a hand with doing the typing. Okay, so Wally, how has the rapport between crooks and cops changed?
Well, I suppose it depends on the individual. Some crooks you can't build any sort of rapport with, but you try and build that rapport so that you can then hopefully get the evidence you need to get that person charged and have that evidence available to them. But you can build up a rapport just seeing crooks that you know. I always used to talk to them if I saw them, and it was funny just on that point that I can remember when I was a uniform sergeant at Paran, we had the Paran courts. And, of course, you would see different crooks that you knew there. And I had one of the young fellas say to me one time, why is it, Wally, that when I see you over the court, if you see a crook, you go and talk to them? Why do you go and talk to those, you know, those people, you know? And I said, well, if you've had dealings with them and you know them, and I said, you speak to them, they gain a bit of trust and respect for you. And I said, you'd be surprised what they tell you. And they might tell you on the side, but you'd be surprised what they might tell you. And even then, some of them go, oh, yeah, but what a waste of time that is. And I say, well, one day you might learn. But trust me that if you build a rapport with a particular crook, you would be surprised the information that you can get from them.
What do you think other qualities are required to make a good detective, Wally?
Well, I think a good listener, a good talker, have a good understanding of the law, and just don't be keep an open mind. Use your peripheral vision. Don't just have tunnel vision. Keep that open mind so that you can look at what's going on around you. But never give up. You might get a job that you're doing comes to a, all of a sudden comes to a dead end. But never give up. Keep searching, keep looking, and I think it's important. But certainly communication and being able to build a rapport, be it with witnesses or be it with your offender, but being able to build that rapport and be a very good communicator, but be a good investigator. Know your trade and know your job. Know all about your job.
Do you recall in the time that you were training detectives about a specific detective that you knew was going to be good or someone that you were training that you knew was going to be one of the best and what made them so good?
Oh, yeah, look, a lot of them, when we you'd be in a class and it might be that just the rapport that you get with the students, the questions, the various subjects that you might be teaching, they get really interested, ask good questions, and then you watch them in the prac exercises that we do where they will go and do the initial action at a crime scene, do all the initial investigation, and we would talk about it back in the staff room, and you might a particular detective's name might come up and they say, yeah, he's got it, he's going to be good, he's going to be really good value. And there was a lot of them like that. But, yeah, they just used to show the traits of being a good communicator, being a good investigator, having a good knowledge of the law, and ask a lot of questions. Never, I used to tell people, don't be frightened to ask questions. If you don't know, don't just plod along with it and think, oh, well, look, they're embarrassed to ask questions in front of other members. Don't do that. Get up and ask and talk and communicate. And we see some people that are like that. And as it turned out, often you'll watch where their career goes and you think, yeah, very good value, and you could see it in them in the early stages of their detective training.
What about female detectives? Did you see any that stood out in your mind?
Oh, look, yeah, there's a lot. A lot of the girls you would probably like to have standing behind you going into a scene than some of the guys that I've seen go through over the years. But no, some of the girls are great. And you know, some of them are average, like a lot of the blokes are average, yes, but there's some girls that do stand out and you can see, you think, yeah, they're going to be good detectives. And I always look at it, to me, it's the person, whether male or female, and whoever it is. But yeah, some of the girls are great. They're really keen, interested, and want to learn their trade, and it's important they do that, and they're great value.
How many detectives do you think, over the years, do you think you've actually trained, Wally?
Yeah, it's funny, we were talking about that recently leading into my retirement, but it would have to be probably 2,000 plus, I would think, probably around that time over the years. I really don't know. I've never... I started to try and look at the different courses I've been involved in, and I just got... I just thought, oh, I can't bother doing this anymore because it was so many to look at. But I would say it would have to be probably 2,000 plus, 2,500, something like that, yeah. But probably any detective in Victoria now... that's become a detective over the last 20 plus years, yeah, I've had something to do with it, yeah.
So how does that feel, Wally, knowing that you've, I suppose, trained in every police, major police station in the state, you've probably trained that detective. How does that feel, knowing that you've had that much impact?
Look, it's a great feeling for me. It's a lot of job satisfaction for me. I hope I've taught them the right way to go about it. I've hoped I've influenced them to be the best detective they can be, because I often will say, when I was emceeing the course closures, and I used to say to them a lot about the learning of their trade, and always think about your victims, think about what you're doing, but always be the best copper you can be and the best detective you can be, because you're here because you want to be here, you want to be a detective, make the most of it. And I know some of the feedback I've received over the years, I think, yeah, well, I haven't done bad with them, so it's good. A lot of satisfaction.
Thank you very much, Wally, for sitting with me today on the Crime Couch.
Pleasure, and I hope I've been able to impart some of my knowledge on crime investigation.
You certainly have, so thanks, Wally. Thanks for joining me. I'm Rochelle Jackson, and I look forward to your company next time on The Crime Couch.